And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Friday. Yes, indeed, it is the 14th of February. We do hope you're very well indeed, and we look forward to your company over the course of the next 3 hours. The first hour taken up by our Friday panel. We're going to discuss some of the topics of the day and of the week, and we want you involved in that conversation as well. So I'll give you the numbers, 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and that's the text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. If you prefer to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com, and as always, you can watch the show. Go to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch on your mobile device or on your Smart TV or Fire Stick, and we're on Facebook and on the X platform as well. Right, Pat McCart's a columnist and former editor of the Derry Journal. He is with us. Good morning, Pat. How are you keeping?
Good morning. Grand, Greg. Thank you.
Very good. Great to have you with us. Great to see you. Hugh Friel, Traveller Men's Development Health Worker with the Donegal Travellers Project. Hi, Hugh. Hugh is either frozen or he's just ignoring me. I'll get back to him in a moment. Breed Corrin's a solicitor and she's with us. Hi, Breed. How are you getting on?
Good morning. Happy Valentine's Day, Greg.
Happy Valentine's Day to you too. It's good to have you on the programme as always. I might start off with a story that's making a lot of the papers today, and the focus is on what many see as another wasteful public-funded project. It's come to light now. The Arts Council spent €7 million on a failed IT system. We're kind of getting used to this type of stuff, I think. Arts Minister Patrick O'Donovan confirmed that an external review would take place after internal examinations by his department were completed earlier this year. At what additional cost, we don't know. But fundamentally, there are people within the council that made these decisions, managers who presume must stand over these decisions. And ultimately, should it not be clear what went wrong and who's at fault? In your opinion, Breed, should we need to put another layer of expense on this to get to the bottom of what appears to be another round of wasteful spending?
Yeah. My brother, when he was young, used to love Laurel and Hardy. And Laurel used to always say to Hardy, "Well, isn't that another fine mess you got me into?" I think this is the second or third time you and I have spoken about government waste. I just despair in relation to external consultants' reviews and ministers announcing more external consultants' reviews. You have a review, you have a report, but there's never any accountability in relation to what is in effect public money, and the lack of accountability in relation to the spending of public money. I'm just beginning to wonder, is there a culture of waste now in this country with regards to government spending? Does it come from the top? Because you could superimpose the wall outside the WRC, the bike shed in Leinster House, or those two words that I'm afraid that it's almost like saying Macbeth and the Scottish play, the children's hospital. It's just like a black hole, a cesspit where all these external consultants' reviews go to die and nothing is done. We don't learn any. This famous phrase that politicians love to use, we learn lessons from this. No, we don't. We never learn any lessons. I don't know what the problem is in this country with regards to learning lessons. I'm just wondering, do we need to bring in a Department of Government Efficiency like our friend Mr. Trump and the White House has done with Elon Musk? Maybe if we brought in Michael O'Leary, who seems to be our version of Elon Musk without the ego, or maybe with the ego, to bring in a Department of Government Efficiency, which is going to do a root and branch review of how we spend public taxpayers' money in this country.
See, I don't know exactly what's going on in the United States as an example, but I was watching a press conference from the White House there recently, and we have what seems to happen here. We have our elected officials, they come out and it's not clear if they're responsible. Are they criticising? Are they defending it? Is it their responsibility? Who's it's not very clear. But now what we're seeing in the United States is the press secretary holding up sheets of paper and saying, this is €55 million that was spent on such and such. That's a disgrace. It can't happen again. So it actually feels like the elected government is holding the non-elected government to account. Now, whether that's bells and whistles or something's happening in reality, I think people are looking at that and going, is that not really the way it should be, that this stuff is called out?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the figures for the Department of Social Protection, the Department of Social Protection spend 1.4 million a week, 1.4 million a week on IT consultancy projects. Okay. And then if you look at the civil service, the public servants, there are 400,000 civil servants in the country. So what I'm wondering is, why can't we get the 400,000 civil servants that we've got in the country to do the jobs that these contractors are brought in to do? And my cynical view in relation to this is that we like to put a breaker between bringing in projects and accountability. And it's very, very easy for Minister O'Donovan to say, well, I'm going to bring in now an external consultant's review. How much is that going to cost for a start, Minister? And can we not just take responsibility and say, Catherine Martin, OK, she was in the previous government, but Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were in the previous administration. Can Catherine Martin not come out and say, yes, this was known, I knew about this, I didn't do anything about the report, I've let the new administration take care of that, but the buck stops with the government in relation to spending. We have to stop this culture of waste. And it has to come from the top, Greg, because you know what? The taxpayers are getting fed up with it. But maybe they're not, because, you know, we only had an election before November. Maybe we're not fed up with it.
I think we vote on what we can get our head around, and we're probably only just getting our head around this. Pat McCart, what's your view? Because I'll give an example, if you'll just indulge me for a second. Oisin Kelly gave me a ring. Oisin Kelly looks after IT here. I hope you won't mind me saying this. He gave me a ring during the week because an invoice came in. Sorry, he was going through the credit card, the company credit card, and there was a payment for €61 to a company. And he rang me up because it seemed to have some sort of an IT element to it. He rang me up and says, do you know where this €61, do you know, did you... I used the card for such and such a payment, and eventually got to the bottom of it. But my point is that in a small company like this, €61, that was scrutinised to find out who ultimately was responsible for that spend and for what it was for. Now, here we have €7 million. We don't know who signed the contracts, who put certain stuff out for consultation, who ultimately should be responsible for €7 million of taxpayers' money going to waste. Like, my point was, and it's a long lead-in, you wouldn't get away with this in a private company, Pat.
Not at all. As Breed's rightly pointed out, Greg, we have a long history. The Children's Hospital, I think, has now become a byword for good God, what's going on type thing. It's the most expensive hospital in the world. We had the bike shed thing. Remember then, earlier, we had the RTE thing, you know, the Ryan Tuberty, and where money just seemed to be in bottomless pit. You keep hearing in Ireland, oh, it's a systemic failure. And as Bridge rightly said earlier as well, nobody's ever held accountable. And it's Greg, look at this. They've spent $6.6 million for an IT system that has never delivered, never even, no sort of governance. You know, when I was managing editor of the Derry Journal years ago, every penny was scrutinised, what you done, where the money went, the bills were paid. How did someone allow $6.6 million to go on an IT system that has never, ever, it's never worked a day? And you sort of go, in this country, look how many young teachers are emigrating, and look how many nurses are emigrating, look how many people are looking for housing, look how many people are paying massive rents and so on, and yet we seem to have money for some of the most ridiculous things. And they're... I'm basically parroting what Breed is saying. There seems to be no accountability whatsoever.
But we've set a system up, because we've seen it with the likes of the Public Accounts Committee, which don't have any teeth anyway. But there's back and forwards, and people come in, and everyone says, "Well, it's not my fault," and then they end, and then really we're no better off. Using the RTE example, the end result of that was a €750 million check for RTE. That's so, you know, it worked out quite well for them. But how come we have a system that you wouldn't see in a private company, Pat, whereby it can be investigated by external consultants, it can go before the PAC committee and everyone can be questioned, and at the end of it, no one really ever is found to be responsible? No one is ever found to be responsible. The system is laughing.
They will bring in an expert. They will bring in some sort of an expert to do an independent review, some sort of consultant who will get paid millions and will say, this can't happen again. And it will happen again.
Okay. We do have with us Hugh Friel, Traveller Men's Development Health Worker with the Donegal Travellers Project. Hi, Hugh. I can't hear you, Hugh. I wonder, are you muted or what's going on? We're having problems with you there. Right, we'll come back to you in a second, Hugh. Sorry, we do have this from time to time. You just keep talking if you hear me, Hugh, and I'll pick you up as soon as we get in. Doge, it is quite interesting to see what's happening over in the United States. Breed did reference that too, you know, whereby you do have the government calling out the government, the permanent government, so to speak. Pat, I'll put that to you if that's all right.
Yeah, it's very interesting what's going on over there. I don't know where you start in regard to what's going on in America right now. It's all over the show. I was reading there this morning. Olaf Scholz, the German Chancellor, he said that Europe could respond within an hour to any tariffs being introduced by the Americans. But what I've sat and watched what's happening this last while, Greg, and it's unbelievable. I sat watching Elon Musk with a child on his shoulders in the Oval Office. I see Trump. He has the young press secretary who looks like she should still be in school. It's unbelievable. I really don't know. It's the most unusual way of governing. It's got a sort of government by press release and press conference. Trump, and so far, he's going to introduce tariffs. He's going to end the war in Ukraine. He's going to give. He's going to take Gaza away from the Palestinians. What else is going to happen?
We don't know. You wake up and you just don't know what's going to happen next. Hugh, I'll give one last chance before the rare break. Are you there, Hugh? No, unfortunately, your microphone's not enacted there, so I'll leave that with you. And just say hello, and I'll pick it up whenever it comes. We're going to speak more generally about the presidency because, as I say, whilst this is happening on the other end of the world, every decision they seem to make, the ripples are like a tsunami over us. It's hard to pretend it doesn't relate to us. What's your views, by the way, listeners, on the Arts Council story? 7 million euro spent on a failed IT system. Another set of consultants are bringing in to find out what went wrong. Consultants were already hired. I don't know why there weren't people within the council that were able to actually administer the IT project. They had to get consultants in to do that, which seemed a bit strange. But anyway, what's your views on that? 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Back with more from Breed, Pat, and fingers crossed, Hugh, after we take this break. A caller says someone else's money is easy spent. We give out and we give out about government overspend and we vote them back in again, a point Breed made. Reculture of waste. Would love to see the figures for free legal aid that is paid to the solicitors and barristers who stand up for recurrent law breakers. The innocent taxpayer is paying for it. Can the public see these figures? Yes, indeed. And they were published during the week. Actually, I'll try and dig them out. It gives a breakdown of those around the country who made the most money. But I'll go to you, Breed, on that. Everyone's, you know, whether you like the person or not, everybody has a right to a defence. That's the law. And if you replaced it with something else.
I know it's very, very hard for members of the public to understand why criminals get representation. I've been a criminal lawyer for the last 29 years. I've represented people who are innocent. I've represented people who are guilty. But the thing I always say to people when they say, you know, friends of mine, if I'm out and they're saying, God, how do you represent people who are guilty? A criminal justice system has to defend everyone. And what I'd say to anyone who questions the amount of money that's spent on legal aid is this. If your son or your daughter, your husband or your wife or your partner was charged with an offence and brought before the court and couldn't afford a solicitor, wouldn't you like to think that there was somebody there to advocate on their behalf? And that's the basis on which our criminal justice legal system has to operate. Everyone has to have a fair trial and proper representation that's properly funded.
A caller says the government likes the Irish emigrating, otherwise there'd be a revolution in Ireland. Breed, opening monologue and comments are 100%. She has an honest, sensible head on her, which is a wonderful Irish
that's
phrase.
That's good, yeah. Don't try me tomorrow.
Morning, Greg. Don't forget about the 1 million euro printer the government bought that couldn't fit into the building. On speculation and misinformation in regards to knife attacks, sexual assaults, rapes and other such like incidents, it would be helpful if the media would report the story accurately rather than covering certain aspects up. Would be helpful to let the public know what's going on. That's on a separate issue. We do cover everything. Often, you know, information about someone who's suspected of a crime is in the media, but for some reason people don't see that because they see a post on X by someone saying it's not being reported. And then they presume that that person on X is completely accurate. But I'll come back to that. Hugh's joining us on the phone line. Hugh Friel, good morning to you. Sorry for all the technical issues.
Oh, I think it was on my side, Craig. Good morning. I had the internet crashed. I don't know what happened, but it just went all... It was going
perfect. That's all right. Before we move on, we were just talking. I'm not sure how much you picked up on it, but a brief comment for you. The latest instances of what people are describing as wasteful expenditure. How frustrating do you find it when you hear these stories of like almost €7 million being spent on an IT system that will never actually function?
I think it's really disgraceful at this stage, Craig. And, you know, we there seems to be a recurring issue with the government in terms of spend. If you look at the bus shelter, you look at RTE, the instance of €5,000 spent on slippers for a party. You look at, you know, the scandals that happen throughout the local authorities throughout the country in terms of spend over prime time coming in, investigates and what, 1.7 million in Mayo, I think it was. If I could be recorrected around that. Supposed to be in walkways, was never spent. You know, former managers of the county council going to independently assess what happened in the other county. You know, this, the bus shelter, you know, was a big scandal of $350,000 about a glass unit and the thing that, you know, that the taxpayer had a fork out for. And I think, like, if we need to have a system of policy where this, like, as you said earlier on, €61 in your account, but Donegal Travellers Project, who I work for, I have to get 3 invoices in relation to anything that I assess or anything that I'm trying to run, even for the men's health programmes, for women's health programmes, for purchase of computers. Everything that we do has to be scrutinised, it has to be accounted for, it has to be justified. So, you know, it doesn't seem to be when it's the boys for the boys and who you are and what you are and what company you exist and how you are. You in with Fianna Fáil or Fianna Gael? Are you in with the government? Are you in with the, you know, the big boys at the top? And you seem to get these big massive contracts like the Children's Hospital, millions and millions pumped into it and continuously being pumped into it. So we need to have accountability around how we process and how we are accounted around public spend and how that's done. And I think these independent audits where they take in these evaluators of what happened. What happened is that the spend of public taxpayers' money was misused. It doesn't take a rocket science to figure that out. And all these committees and all these analysts around what happened cost millions again.
Now, in fairness, the Arts Council, to be fair, they said that they had the government in the loop the whole time, and it was the Department of Arts and Culture that was actually burying its head in the sand. And some members of the opposition are asking, you know, were you made, you did know about this before the election? Did you purposely keep it quiet because, you know, it'd be controversial and then could come out after the election as the saviours of the day? Right. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky will meet US Vice President J.D. Vance for talks in Munich later, with the war in Ukraine expected to dominate a major security meeting of world leaders. Zelensky's also expected to meet US Secretary of State Marco Rubio. It comes as Ukraine and its European allies are still reacting to US President Donald Trump's surprise announcement this week that he and Russia's Vladimir Putin had agreed in a call to begin talks to end the war. Pat McCart, Ukraine has been told that it should not expect to join NATO as part of any deal, that it should not expect to have its pre-2004 territory or 2014 territory returned to it. Do you welcome these developments, or maybe I've been reflecting, what was it all about, if that's going to be the terms of any settlement? What was all of this death and destruction about? What's your view, Pat?
I'm sort of working on the basis, Greg, that Trump is going to sell Ukraine out. But 3 years ago, Russia invaded Ukraine. Now, Russia did have its reasons, but basically they invaded the sovereign country. Trump had an hour and a half conversation with Putin this week, and it seems that the Russians and the Americans are going to ignore the EU going to ignore Ukraine and going to carve up some sort of deal. Now, Russia controls about one-fifth of Ukraine as we speak, and they're saying they're going to hold on to this. Like in 2014, Putin invaded and took over, I think it was the Donbass region and Crimea. They're still there. The Ukrainians are basically saying they're fighting for our country. You know, that's what we're fighting for. We have been invaded. And I think Donald Trump is going to very cynically just dump them. He's going to betray them. That's in my opinion. Now, I accept totally there are people probably listening.
But what's the alternative, Pat? I mean, what is the alternative? How else does this come to a conclusion? Because the United States have said it's no longer going to put in the same amount of money to Ukraine. I think it's generally accepted that Ukraine cannot resist Russia without American support. So what's the alternative to this? Sending, you know, young men and women into the meat grinder in perpetuity? Well,
the alternative, Greg, would be for it was an illegal war. I don't think people who invade another people's country should get rewarded, and I think that's what Trump has in mind. Now, Russia has genuine concerns in regard to what was going on in Ukraine, but I don't think you should sort of say, if you invade a country and hold on to one-fifth of it, that, okay, that's fine. That's
well, the
morally
English got,
okay.
The English got away with it all right.
Yeah, but look at the there's what 117,000 Ukrainians living in Ireland as we speak. There's a whole lot of them have gone into Germany. There's a lot of upheaval, and I don't think them. I think what's happening, and maybe we'll get onto the Gaza thing as well later on. But Trump basically seems to think that he is now master of the universe, and whatever he says goes. Might is right, and there's no morals or any other thing involved.
I'm not trying to give you a job as an armchair general, but again, I'll ask the question, what is the alternative, though, when you look at
it? Negotiations on a fair and equal basis, that the Russians go back to where they came from, that maybe Ukraine do not join NATO, that Russia gets guarantees that there will be no infringement, that they are... have access to warm water ports for their fleet and so on. There are many ways this could be done, but rewarding somebody who has invaded another sovereign country is not the way to go about it.
Hugh Friel, what's your view? I mean, it does seem to be that we are in the end game of this war, but it will come at a cost. It'll come at a profit to Russia and the United States, it would seem, but it will come at a cost to Ukraine. What's your view?
I think, Greg, you know, if we look at this, since President Trump has got elected and his team behind him has excavated, like, his power of social media, signing declarations, signing policies, they're running in America, the big major companies at the minute around diversity, slashing out diversity in their policies and re-implementing different policies within it. He's a man of stature that I see and foresee starting a global war. He wants to go down in history in different various ways. And psychology around that, I don't know, like if Michael D. Higgins came out with the half or quarter or even one-fifth of what he's saying and what he's trying to do, would be, you know, this country wouldn't take it. The people of this country wouldn't take it. I would assume they wouldn't. But his view on Ukraine and Russia, he's going to Russia to solve the war and boycotting Zelensky, and that's not going to happen. Zelensky will not bow down to the US president, nor will he bow down to Russia. I think that's going to escalate things. I think it's going to make things worse. You know, where NATO and different various bodies, you know, and the negotiation and peaceful talks around ending this war. I think Trump is around, he's escalating. He's trying to escalate things more than he is trying to resolve it.
Is that a fair assessment, though, Hugh? And I have to play devil's advocate here, as you understand. I mean, you know, he says the war should never have started in the first place, that Zelensky was, you know, a puppet president, that, you know, NATO should never have been trying to sort of get so close to the Russian border. Russia is a massive, massive country, and, you know, it was squeezed and squeezed and squeezed, and eventually it bit back. The new world order can't be a world without Russia, because they're too powerful. So rather than causing global conflict. Has he not shown in the last couple of weeks that he's actually the person that cools the Cold War, so to speak, and brings Russia back into the fold, leaving a safer, more stable global situation?
I don't know, Craig, how you can make that assessment. All for starters,
it's not but my assessment. We're talking.
This man. In my opinion, is psychotic, and his policies and his power. It's around power and establishment and you know direction that he's the dictator. And this is what the world's going to do because Donald Trump has said, I'm telling you to stop this war. I'm telling you, I'm taking over Gaza. I'm going to talk to Israel now. You know, we'll go on that topic, but like he's prediction of who he is and what he is and how powerful the man thinks he's God. He thinks he's God. They think there's no. So if he decided tomorrow that he wanted to take over Ireland, you know, it's in his power to say, right, I want Ireland. So do you know what I mean? He's that kind of a character of a man, well, saying like you know.
We see it with Greenland and what have you. I'll come back to you, Hugh. I want to bring Breed in as well. Breed, I mean, obviously there's a couple of things going on. We might talk about Gaza, but just in terms of the US intervention in Ukraine, because it affects us, it directly affects us and directly affects 120,000 people living here now, as Pat quite rightly pointed out. But Breed, what's your assessment of what's happened over the last few days?
I read a very, very interesting piece by Ian Robertson, who's a clinical psychologist in Trinity College. He's absolutely wonderful. If you ever get a chance to read anything that he writes, the man he applies psychology to real day world problems. And he says that the impact of power on the human brain is like cocaine. And that power and this sense of power that Trump now has being back in the White House with that great result that he had increases his testosterone, which boosts dopamine, which acts like cocaine. And he's got this delusion now that he can just snap his fingers and fix anything. So if you take that analogy that Ian Robertson, the clinical psychologist, has used and apply it to what he's doing this week with Putin, who also, I would say, suffers from exactly the same fate as Trump. The ego in the room with those two men, I'm sure, is quite something. But if you think now that Trump thinks that he can just snap his fingers and he can fix everything, he can fix Ukraine, he can fix Gaza, what he's doing now is he's dictating the terms of settlement for this war, which you can't do. International law precludes any nation from dictating to another sovereign nation the terms of settlement. He's telling them that they can't join NATO. Well, we all know what Trump thinks of NATO anyway, so that's no surprise. But he's also telling Ukraine that they have to cede some of their national territory. And that's extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. The issue, of course, is that without US funding, Ukraine is going to cede much more than one-fifth of its national territory. So the practical reality, and I believe that the leader of the Ukrainian government is a practical person, he's going to have to sit at the table and suck up an awful lot of the ego of Trump and Putin and tell him what the terms of settlement are. And Europe are going to be completely, Pat is quite correct, Europe are going to be completely sidelined out of that because at the end of the day, Trump thinks that NATO is a waste of time and money. He also has no regard whatsoever for the European Union. And all of this is playing right into his egotistical hands. And I'm afraid that the Ukrainians are going to have to suck up an awful lot. And what it means, and Pat is quite correct, what Trump has done this week is he is rewarding Putin for his bad behaviour. And we all know...
Do we have to take any responsibility for this, though, in that, you know, we have been... and I hope people understand when I say we have been fighting a proxy war with Russia in Ukraine at the expense of the Ukraine people. And I know it comes down to ceding maybe a fifth of their territory and all that kind of stuff. But do we not have to sort of reflect and say how much of responsibility we have to take in relation to this and to support it and support it going forward? It's easy for us to sit in the comforts of our homes, you know, thousands of miles away from these bombs. But at the end of the day, it is the Ukrainian people and mostly young men who are effectively, you know, holding the line with Putin on this. And people are, hundreds of people are dying every or being maimed every single day.
But that's war. Mm. That's war. How can a small nation of 6 million people affect the national or international politics with regards to what's going on at the minute with the egomaniac that we have in the White House, the complete psychomaniac that we have in Moscow, and then a nation that's right on our doorstep, that's right at the edge of Europe. I've often thought, actually, that it's at times like this that we should embrace our European Union, our membership of the European Union much more, and just basically just say our foreign policy is that of the European Union. But Trump, unfortunately, does not give one jot for what the European Union thinks.
And another thing that happened quite interestingly in the last couple of days that might have gone over people's heads is the money that the US put into supporting Ukraine wasn't a loan. It was just support. And Donald Trump now has reframed it as a loan that must be paid back through earth and minerals and what have you, which is...
Greg, he's looking for $500 billion in rare metals from the Ukrainians. He's already put that in the record. And the other thing, I think it's often overlooked as well, most of the weapons the EU have supplied to Ukraine have been bought from American armament companies. So the Americans have got very, very rich on, or a lot of American businesses particularly have got very rich on what the EU has spent.
So just before we move on, none of you see the developments of the last couple of days as a positive that we could have a pathway to ending a war that probably has no other end. You know, it's just us, the West.
Positive about ignoring international law, Greg? Positive about international law and the rules of international law being completely ignored and allowing someone in a foreign jurisdiction, i.e. the United States, dictate terms of settlement? What's positive about that?
No, I can't not counter-argue that. I was just posing the question. Hugh, one second, Pat. Sorry, come in there. No, don't be sorry, Pat.
Peter was saying there, it's exactly right. And I think, you know, the terms and conditions of the EU international law and the Security Council and the different various bodies, the Security Council has the biggest, Breed with more meaning in this regard, but they have more the power of you know, around the conflict and the war. But Trump's intervention or trying to intervention is a power dynamic, and as I said, that it's a maniac style of leadership. I don't know how he's got there by the populist vote. I don't know what the cabinet or his backbenchers or his advisors are saying to him. But certainly, it's not looking good, and it's not looking good for the world. You know, because we talk about war in Ukraine, and it's a far distance away. We have 116,000 Ukrainians here to 120. But when we had the storm here for a few days, you look how people panicked. Like Letterkenny, the mountaintop, people were running to buy food. The cards wasn't working. You had to go get. You couldn't get cash. You know, people hadn't availed of cash. Were stuck for a few days. No electricity, no water, and this country fell to its knees. And I thought it was amazing to think that we fell to our knees in a couple of days because a storm came for 8 or 9 or 10 hours, battered this country, and we all panicked. We all went into kind of like isolation modes. We didn't know what to do because we had no electric or, you know, our cooking facilities. Everything went down. Our phones, our internet. This, like, if you look at Palestine, if you look at Gaza, if you look at Ukraine, like, we're very, very fortunate of a couple of hours storm, in fairness, to think that people are enduring, picking up their children dead on the street, picking up their parents, picking up their grannies, picking up their uncles, brothers and sisters, being bombed and being shot every day of the week. And, you know, living in fear, living in this society where you can't go outside your front door if you have a front door. And Trump, he's on the other hand saying, listen, I'm coming on here, I'm the big boss, you know, and as Breed said, like he's endorphins in his brain as like cocaine bear, whatever.
But also
you call
too, we can't ignore the Western leaders' role in all of the conflicts and issues that we talk of as well, can we? We can't pretend there's only two actors in this, Putin and Trump, or the U.S. administration and the Israelis and the Palestinians. I mean, have we not, Breed or Pat, been complicit in all of this as well to some extent? Our leaders in their language and, you know, not going into negotiations when there was possibilities to negotiate, deciding that this was the route that they wanted to take. You know, so does there not have to be some sort of collective responsibility for the situation we found ourselves in?
I'm at Breed School this time.
Oh, that's passionate. yeah, you see, the issue here is the European Union did very little to negotiate. But could they negotiate? Can you negotiate with Putin? Can somebody, can the European Union be strong enough to ring up Mr. Putin or his advisors and say, we'd like to have a meeting with you to have a chat about how Ukraine, sitting on our border, is going to be able to join NATO, because that's what it wants to do, and how we'd like you to give back Donbass and Crimea, please, thanks very much. I don't think so. And when you're dealing with somebody as egotistical as Putin, who will only recognize another egotist who's the current lunatic in the White House. And it's between the two of them, because the European Union are just much too law-based and rules-based for anybody like Trump or Putin to take notice of.
Yeah, okay.
Do you remember the time that the Russian ambassador went on to RTE and he said, we're not going to invade
That's
Ukraine,
right, yes.
Despite the fact that there was a 40-mile build-up of troops.
Envoy.
And then I think it was Macron went to Russia, and Putin had him sitting at the end of a table, about a 40-foot table. And as Breach rightly pointed out, several efforts were made big time. As far as I remember, the guy Stoltenberg, the NATO guy, went to see him, Putin as well. So I think the efforts were made to sort of try and get a solution. And Putin's ego was, he sees himself as some sort of modern day Russian Tsar to bring back the glory days of Russia. And by the way,
which is what Donald Trump is actually doing, the Gulf of Mexico, the Gulf of the USA, Greenland. But it's also interesting. Kamala Harris said that all this was going to happen. She stated that the likes of Putin would be able to play to Donald Trump's ego. I do have to take a break. Yeah. So think on, we've got 4 minutes if anyone needs to grab a coffee. We'll be back after this break. The hour has flown as always. We're back after this break with more from our guests. Just a quick one on this. And I think we've done this a couple of times by coincidence, Breed. It's not people actively sort of trying to bring up legal questions, because you are a solicitor, but they asked, and it might be just interesting, how do you sleep at night defending someone you know that's guilty, I think was the thrust of the question.
As a self-employed solicitor, there's some nights I don't sleep. I do a lot of family law, and that can be very, very difficult as well. I trained as a solicitor. I'm now qualified 29 years. The backbone of any civilized society is that if you are charged with a crime, you have the right to be defended. Mm-hmm. You may be innocent, you may be guilty. My job is to do my best for anybody who comes into my office and says, I have been charged with X, Y, or Z. I have to park any feelings that I have and put on my professional hat and represent that person to the best of my ability. Sometimes I don't sleep at night. Thanks for asking. Sometimes I do sleep at night. 9 times out of 10, the criminal justice system gets it right. And it depends on having a well-versed system, which is legally represented, where you get legal aid from people who know what they're doing, and try their best to make sure that the legal justice system gets it right.
And if you start tinkering with that, it's quite obvious to me, if you start sort of, you know, saying, oh, that person doesn't deserve a defence or what have you, the house of cards could fall, because then what's next?
Oh, absolutely.
And the person doesn't know when you all of a sudden would be a victim of that. I'm just going to do
it. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you come at it with everyone is innocent until proven otherwise by a court.
Obviously, Taoiseach Micheál Martin, Taoiseach Simon Harris, there are 38, amongst 38 state representatives visiting more than 90 cities in 40 countries for St. Patrick's Day, the majority of them going to America. This is just really pretty much a sentence from all of you, if you don't mind. Hugh Friel, do you think this is a good idea, particularly the focus on America, to try and sort of shore up relationships and limit the impacts of tariffs? It's the annual one, of course, but just a quickie from you. Do you think it's a good idea that the ministers are heading abroad with the focus on the United States?
Greg, in relation to, I think it's more a symbolic issue than that they're going to do the handshakes with the US and anything else. I don't think it benefits Ireland. I don't think that it's a holiday for the boys and the powers to be to travel around the world and to shake hands and to look good. I don't think it economically or anything does any justice for Ireland. I don't think that I haven't seen the benefits of that. Mm. These visits to America. So I don't know. Like it's a very thingy area. I suppose a lot of a grey area in terms of a lot of people would like to see Michael Martin go to America. I believe in some of the polls. So my opinion that I don't see the benefit of it. Benefits Ireland and it has repercussions in terms of the economic status of Ireland. Then yes, but otherwise I don't know what it's about.
I don't know. I suppose the government could argue that all the trade deals, our exports to China, our exports to the United States, the inward investment, foreign direct investment. This is all evidence of the success of these trips. I don't know what you think, Pat McCart.
On balance, Greg, I think actually it's not a bad idea. It's sort of Irish soft power, you know, and it's PR. Now, I presume it's nearly impossible to sort of gauge what exactly the benefits are. But in terms of getting Ireland wearing the green jersey, as they say, I think it's a good idea. You know, people can slag it off, and many people do. But by and large, you know, I don't think it does any harm. Like, Trump will pass, and we need to keep our channels open to a lot of big hitters in America, big corporate people. You know, we're doing all right in certain aspects. Now, as Breach earlier pointed out, like, there's a bit of a lunatic in the White House at the minute, so maybe we should just ignore that.
Yeah, but 50% of the population of the United States voted for him, and his approval rating is at 80% at the moment. So there's an awful lot of people in the United States would not appreciate your framing, Pat McCart.
The Germans voted for Hitler. Didn't mean it was right.
There's a word for that.
Yeah, but it's the same argument. What,
something's law. What's it called?
But just because somebody voted for
how
it
quick,
mean,
how
you
quick,
know,
how quick does an argument descend to Nazism?
Not the truth.
Breed. Go ahead, Hugh. Sorry, before I bring Breed in.
Hey, if you look at the slavery that happened in America, so you think back to them kind of times of slavery and injustice and you know, America can be a very right-winged country in terms of leadership and dictatorship, and this is us. We're America, and you, the rest of the world, will do what you think. That's the mentality of what Trump's at the minute, and they're liking it.
All right, Hugh, that's your view. Breed, what's your opinion?
Absolutely, we need to send our Irish ministers to the United States of America. I don't know what sort of reception they're going to get. I don't even know if the invitation has been extended yet from the White House.
But the thing is the language on the activity, the language that's been used in this hour towards Donald Trump, right, and what he's been responsible for, mm-hmm. and all of that type of stuff. And we've been maybe talking about moral stands and what's morally right, mm-hmm. and what's wrong. But as soon as it suits us potentially, it's okay for the leader of this country to go and break bread and exchange shamrocks with Donald Trump. Is that not hypocritical?
We're not representing when the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach are in the United States, we are not representing the Palestinians in Gaza, unfortunately. I don't want them to go and represent the Palestinians in Gaza. I want them to go and represent Irish concerns in relation to the economy. Irish people who are undocumented living in the United States,
or as we call them here, illegal immigrants. In America they're undocumented Irish, and if you're British and you're in Spain and Portugal, you're an expat. But if you come here, you're an illegal immigrant. They're all the same category of people. Now you can argue the toss, but
we're all in the same boat. Our problem is this: we are a very, very small country. For one day of the year, we get to fly a flag. No other nation in the world gets that exposure for PR for the day. And we have to park. Unfortunately, we have to get off our high horses, our high moral horses, for one day and do the best for the Irish economy. Because God knows the politicians need so much money to waste Well, we need to bring in as much as possible.
Breed, thanks so very much indeed. I really enjoy your company as always. Breed Corin, take care of yourself. Thanks so much indeed.
Thank you.
Pat McCart, God bless you. Lovely to speak to you. I hope you have a lovely weekend.
You, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. And Hugh Friel, thanks for overcoming the technical issues. It's been nice having you on the show. Lovely having you on, in fact. Have a great weekend, Hugh.
Same to you, Craig. Same to you.
Okay, and make sure plenty of romance. Don't drop the ball on us. Okay, good man. Breed Corin, solicitor, Pat McCart, columnist and former editor of the Derry Journal, Hugh Friel, traveller, men's development, health worker with the Donegal Travellers Project, and you at home, at work, wherever you are. We've had a tremendous response on the phone lines. I mean, as it turns out, we can't curate the panels as much, but obviously a lot they are of like mind on certain issues as well. Not so much our listeners, though. And I'll be platforming those views and those opinions, which are incredibly important, of course, after the news and obituary notices.